What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome back to episode 155 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined for the 155th time by the man, the myth, the boomer, Joey. What's popping, fool?
The boomer. Come on. What is up with that?
Oh, it's a great little meme that's been popping up here since, I believe, like the other week when one of our OTN members was nice enough to categorize you as a boomer, apparently.
Do you even remember what we were talking about? I feel like we were talking about like the Xbox dashboard or whatever the,
What's it called? The
Xbox Game Bar, the Game Bar on PC. Yeah. I like the new Game Bar. I'm a fan of the new Game Bar. I got called a boomer because of it. I mean, come on, it's accessibility, you got a little friends list. Yeah, not everyone uses the Xbox friends list, but you can see your CPU usage, you got access to Microsoft with the Xbox Game Pass. Like, it's not that bad, people.
All right, if you say so.
As Josh would say over at the Game Gym, I'm okay standing on this hill if this is the hill that makes me a boomer.
Are you going to die on this hill? Or are you going to take that one to your grave? All right, fair enough, Joey, I'm not here to judge you. Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, follow the boomer himself, Joey at Courtside King, or not a boomer. You can make your own judgments based upon his Twitter. It's fine. That's at Courtside King and myself, John, at Fiasco. If you are watching here live on Twitch, welcome to the stream. As always, you can find those handles below those horrific mugshots you're currently staring at on your stream. And if you're listening on your podcatcher of choice down the road, they'll be in the show notes for you below. And Nation, while you're at it, it's a new year, so that means new reviews. Why not leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice? The Level Up Podcaster is available on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Reviews do go a long way, help grow the show and reach new listeners. So when you do have a moment, make it a New Year's resolution, why not? Leave us a really cool review on your podcatcher of choice. Nation, we are ringing in 2020 with 2 weeks worth of gaming and esports news, at least that's what it feels like sometimes, including the departure of three major figures from the Overwatch League. But wait, there's more. Joey, what else are we talking about here on episode 155?
John, on top of that, we have some big CSGO acquisitions. I think it was last episode, so it was right before Christmas. We had a ton of shuffling in the CSGO scene, new rosters being picked up, rosters being bought out completely, a few rumors here and there. One of those rumors has come to fruition here with C9. We'll talk a bit about that as well as some other roster moves. Like you said, the Overwatch League changes, especially on the caster half, are big, big news. League of Legends is coming up. The pro scene starts in just a couple weeks and much, much more.
Oh, weeks away from pro League of Legends coming back. I'm excited. Count me as excited, Joey, on your little whiteboard behind you, or is that still just a bare white wall? So you just put it right? Yep, right there. It's perfect. Joey, amazing topics. I can't wait to kick off episode 155 and 2020 with another amazing Level Up Podcast. But Joey, before we can even touch on those amazing topics, of course, it is a tradition we're bringing into the next decade. Of course, I am talking about the drink of choice, Joey. So for the first alcoholic beverage or other adult beverage of choice of 2020, you only get to make one first impression kicking off the new year correctly, Joey. Do not screw this up. Your beverage, please.
Oh, I'm screwing this one up, friends.
Oh, no.
I am not feeling well today. I have a ton of craft beer downstairs, a lot of bourbon. We're not going that route, though. We're going tea with peppermint. The stomach is not settling too well, and I don't think putting some beer down there is going to make it any better.
Joey, I'm very disappointed in you. So I finished 2019 off with an amazing cold. That's the one thing I got for Christmas was a delightful cold. People, I do believe in gift giving, but that's one gift you should not give. But Joey, I am not wussing out. I am bringing the alcohol. In fact, I'm gonna class up 2020 here just a wee bit.
Oh, wow.
Joey, I am a amateur wine connoisseur, if you will, as you know. So this is a lovely Cabernet from a winery in Washington State. It's the Columbia Valley. It's called Intrinsic, which has this really cool label on it. It's a...
Is it a heart?
No, it's a woman dancing, I guess.
Oh, that's a red dress?
It's a red dress that goes like all the way around the bottle, which is kind of cool.
It looks like an organ.
Yeah, but that is from Washington. So I have a lovely glass of Cabernet that I will be fiddling with throughout the show because, Joey, 2020 is classy, baby. Let's make it happen. So we're go with that. Joey, I don't want to waste any more time. We got tons of things to talk about. So let's jump right into gaming and e-sports news. Let's go.
John, you know what else is in Washington? That's Microsoft. Microsoft Xbox. Unfortunately, they are not in the news today. But I just had to make that reference because why not?
Thank God.
Industry acquisitions and departures, how we usually kick it off as we did in 2019. We're kicking it off this year in 2020. G2 Esports, the finalist that lost to a Chinese team in League of Legends. G2, who has suffered a bit in CSGO. G2, who had some good times in Rocket League. They're continuing to build up their League of Legends squad. They did so well last year. They looked like one of the best teams in the world last year, arguably number one on a lot of people's power rankings prior to their loss to FunPlus Phoenix in the finals of Worlds. They are jumping into the academy system, reworking their academy team, this time pairing up with Arctic Gaming for their academy squad. John, this is something a bit different. A lot of the previous squads we've seen in the LEC is teams like Fnatic, is teams like Vitality, building their own squads or buying squads completely. With this move in particular, it looks more like a partnership that G2 is setting up, almost to see how the organization of Arctic is doing.
Yeah, and I guess it makes sense. If there's one thing that the EU scene does, the LEC does well, it's their ability to kind of find that raw talent, that talent in smaller regions for League of Legends. I believe Jacob Wolf put out an article today for ESPN Esports talking about the differences between EU and NA when it comes to League of Legends, how NA kind of wants to buy those, you know, high experience veterans in the scene and kind of try to push their way forward that way. When EU really does go out of their way to kind of mature that young talent and develop them into these big powerhouse names, Fnatic, an organization that comes to mind when you think about some of the major names that were developed through that organization in League of Legends. And this is G2 just kind of continuing that trend, partnering with Arctic Gaming here. Some smaller known players in this organization, players that may not have made an impact on the larger international scene outside of Europe or maybe outside of a smaller region like maybe a Turkey or maybe a Russia. So I like this move. It's worked for the EU. Back-to-back years, they have been second place in Worlds. Fnatic 2 years ago and last year G2, like you said. So it works for EU. And really, that's the way esports needs to go. NA is kind of stuck in that NA mentality of you buy the big name star, you buy the proven veteran, and then you kind of just throw pieces around them and hopefully it works. Hey, Team Liquid. So, you know, it doesn't really play out that well, and it hasn't played out well for North America. It's tried and proven in Europe. I like this partnership. I like this for G2.
Yeah, and everyone talks about the esports financial bubble. If you look at that bubble as a whole, worldwide speaking, yeah, you can argue that the Asian countries like China and South Korea put a lot of money toward players. But if you look at NA as well, NA is overvaluing a lot of players because they're not willing to develop their own talent. I think some squads are. You look at Cloud9, that flag behind you. I think they have done a really good job. I mean, Blabber has come from that team. Contrax has come from their academy system. Licorice came from their academy system. They've been able to develop. Zazel was another one. I mean, I feel like they've had a ton of different players come from their academy system. When you look at EU, Fnatic has done a good job. G2, on and off, has done a good job. But there's a number of teams over in EU in comparison to NA that are willing to invest in that talent. I think NA wants to argue, oh, the talent's not there. Europe always produces better mids. But if you look at it, if NA puts the money into the coaching and into developing those young players, I think the talent in NA, hello, 2020 coming hard. When you look at it overall, though, the talent is there. NA is plenty talented. We've shown it in sports. We compete in multiple sports across the world. Soccer, we're a little iffy in at times, outside of women's soccer. But when you look at overall, we're fielding teams in professional football, baseball, basketball, world-class teams in all these sports. And there is a number of population, as far as youth go, that are not playing sports, that are in there for competitive gaming or in there for different aspects, whether it be playing chess, whether it be playing a video game, many, many things other than sports that also catch the kids' interest. This is one of those things. There are video gamers out there who are not becoming professional athletes in a sports realm or professional musicians, anything like that. The talent is there. It just needs to be fostered. And like you said, John, Jacob Wolf did a good job of hitting on it. I feel like we've hit on it in multiple episodes, so we don't need to spend any more time on it. But when it's out there, we've seen it with Europe. It's being proven statistically over and over again. I like the fact that G2 and Europe, it continues to invest in that way, and I hope we see more of that from NA. Cloud9, speaking of them developing their own rosters, this time they went out and bought one, but they did buy more of a minor one. This is not your big name team like a Fnatic or G2 or an Astralis. They went out here and bought, it's ATK, the majority of their roster. That's going to be JT as the captain, MOTM, I believe it's Man of the Match, OC, Floppy, Sonic, and Coach TC. I like this move from C9. Again, going back to their principle, they're trying to find well-known players, but they're finding players that are well-known at a young stage. These are players that are not the top notch yet, but they're players that have proven that they can get potentially to that top notch. So I really, really like this move from C9.
Yeah, I like to blame these kind of younger moves with Cloud9 on kind of known but kind of really untapped talent on that bromance they have with Fnatic. I feel like that's where Fnatic's influence kind of helps Cloud9 here a little bit. And in all honesty, there may be some kind of truth to that. You know, Cloud9, a premier organization in North America, Fnatic mainly out of Europe but known worldwide. Also, we hear stories year after year after year how those two organizations almost always, it feels like, work together, especially in Worlds for League of Legends. So who knows? Maybe, you know, Jack and the brain trust over there at Fnatic, you know, Jack being from Cloud9, have talked about the idea of developing that youth, developing that raw, maturing talent. I like this move. It's great. We hit on this a couple episodes ago when it was just a rumor. It's now official now. I really like this move. Some of these players have that talent. They have that factor. Mechanically, they're very gifted. They understand CSGO very well. They know how to play their strategy, their communication. It's all there. It's now just maturing it from this kind of raw potential into what Cloud9 fans want, which is essentially a repeat of the Boston Major. And then probably sell the whole team off again. But, you know, it happens. It works in esports. It works in sports that way. You mature talent. They move on. More money. It's whatever. But I do like this move for CSGO for Cloud9. So, yeah, here's to the new team. And hopefully another North American team can win a major.
I mean, this is the route to go, though. You look at C9 before. They went out and they bought, I think it was Flusha from Fnatic at the time. They spent on a veteran player. They brought in his veteran experience. They ended up doing decently well with him. I don't remember if they won a tournament or they went to the finals with that tournament with him and Golden, but they ended up deciding they weren't going to move forward with him. He went back to Fnatic. Golden eventually went back to Fnatic as well, and now we have Cloud9 here investing in that young talent. They could have went the veteran route. They have the money to go the veteran route. We've seen the numbers before. Cloud9 is one of the most well-earned organizations as far as monetarily speaking. They're doing well financially. Even if they're giving stocks away to players, it's not allowed.
It wasn't reported correctly, sir.
Excuse me. Paperwork, you never know. But when it comes down to it, they are continuing to invest in that young talent. Like we said, they did it with League of Legends. Now they're continuing to expand that into other titles. They've done it before in CSGO, now going back to their roots, trying to build a team up from the ground up, and hopefully they'll win a major here in 2020. Rogue, they are returning to Rainbow Six Siege. John, Rainbow Six Siege just seems to be that game just redefining itself so much year after year. This is a game that came out. It did all right on release, but it feels like the esports scene at least just continues to grow stronger and stronger. I see more and more people picking this game up on Steam sales every time. It's just continuing to grow. And now this is Rogue saying, hey, we're continuing to grow our global esports brand. We want to buy into this growing title, this title that already understands how revenue sharing should work. They're jumping in here with the Giants gaming roster, or at least four players of it. Oh, these names should be fun. I think it's Ryze, Hicks, Aces, and Corey. And then they're also going to have Rips coming in, who played under Orglis and the Na'Vi banners previously. I honestly don't know a ton about these players, but I love the fact that we see an organization like Rogue, one of those top-tier organizations, or at least getting up to top-tier, buying into Rainbow Six Siege.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I think this is another great move for Rogue, returning to Rainbow Six, a game. Like you said, Joey, it's not really going anywhere. It's kind of holding its position. It is growing. So it's always good for esports when these titles do continue to grow. They're making a lot of great moves. We've hit on it multiple times here on the Level Up podcast about being willing to embrace the esport organizations and offer those in-game skins and in-game content, something that Fortnite still won't do. You know, there's other games that have adopted that same practice as well. League of Legends did, I believe, skins for certain champions in colors of teams that made it to Worlds. That was something unique that they really haven't done too much. Generally, it's just icons or banners or emotes or something like that. So Rainbow Six really kind of, I'm not going to say leading the way, but really making a strong presence and being able to allow players to rep their orgs in game. And that's just only going to increase the people that want to play the game, to grow the interest, and to grow that esports scene into something even bigger. So it's great that an organization like Rogue is coming back to Rainbow Six with a pretty decent roster of people who already have that experience in the game, who have that experience of that limelight as well.
Right, and Rainbow Six didn't, it's not like Sony inventing cross-platform play over there. Rainbow Six was one of those games, like I said, they've been around for a while, but they were an early adopter, it felt like, in this in-game process as far as allowing esports teams to merchandise in-game. League of Legends has done it with their champion skins before. There's a number of games out there who have done it, but once games started to do it more and more often, it felt like Rainbow Six just jumped right on it. They're not one of these games that really wanted to sit out and see how these other orgs and how these other games do for a year. They just wanted to buy in. They wanted to allow teams to profit now. They wanted to build the organization and build the league alongside those teams, and I think it's really helped them build a strong foundation with great organizations in doing so. This next one brings a few tears to my eyes. Casters Monte Cristo and Doa will no longer be with the Overwatch League. And John, that's not all. Puckett, the host of the Overwatch League, will also be leaving. This is heading into Overwatch League's crucial third season. This is the season where they're going to homestands completely, John. No more things happening in the Blizzard Arena, at least to my knowledge. It's all going to be based on homestands all over the world, all the way to China, West Coast, East Coast of United States, over in Europe. There's homestands everywhere. There's lots of concerns over travel costs right now. And on top of that, you're losing arguably your best color commentator, arguably your best play-by-play commentator, and your top host. Some people will disagree with us. Some people will say this guy's better, that girl's better, da-da-da-da, and they can have their own opinions. But when you look at the level of expertise that they bring to the table, Monty and Doa are some of the most seasoned casters in all of esports, from their experience with League of Legends in particular over with OGN in South Korea. Monty was also a team owner at one point. Since then, he started a talent agency. Like, there is a number of different areas that these guys have seasoned experience. Puckett as well, I believe he started with StarCraft, am I right?
Is he a professional StarCraft player? I do believe so, yeah.
I think he was StarCraft, yeah. So, a wealth of esports experience. These guys have been around for almost the whole decade, it feels like, in esports, if not longer than that. So not only are you losing very strong voices on the desk and in the game, as far as we look at on the TV production side, but losing that knowledge that they bring from the esports of past into the esports of future is a big, big hit for the Overwatch League as well.
I want to present this in a way that maybe people who don't understand what Monty and Doa and Puckett were able to do. Between Monty and Doa alone, 7+ years as a team, combined team, casting League of Legends, like you said, Joey, casting Overwatch League. I believe they dabbled in TFT for a Twitch rival stream for a little bit as well. It is an art to be able to explain and describe what's happening in a video game. We all play video games for the most part. If you're listening to this, you obviously have an interest in esports, or maybe you're starting to get, exposure to esports, and you can understand how difficult it may be to recognize what's happening in a game. The play-by-play guy is supposed to be able to paint a picture. He's essentially an artist, painting a picture of what's happening in the game, so maybe the person who doesn't understand what's going on can get a better understanding. The color commentator goes more in depth to kind of explain why X, Y, and Z happened, why so-and-so ulted here, why they did this kind of maneuver here, why they flanked there, so on and so forth. They paint a picture for the viewer, and it's not just calling the game. It's not just being those voices that are overlaying the pro action, but it's the person, it's the people that bring you the stories. It's the people that kind of set up that hype for you. I mean, can you imagine watching some of these games if it was just in-game sound and there's no commentating on it? You would have to have so much knowledge as a viewer to kind of catch every small little detail. That's something that Doa and Monte Cristo were able to do for almost a full decade together as a team. They are arguably the best, and everyone has a right to their opinion, arguably the best casters at what they do. And Puckett, probably one of the best hosts of any esport out there. I mean, I put him right up there with Golden Boy. Very, very good at what he does. And this is a huge knock for Overwatch League. I remember When Overwatch League was first announced and they made that transition from League of Legends to Overwatch, a lot of people were giving them a lot of grief because they didn't understand the game. Well, they had a month to learn it. Of course, they're not going to understand it. But something that they did is they grew with the game. They grew to understand it. They played it. They got that understanding. They were able to do their job, and they did it almost second to none. And now Monty's leaving over creative differences with Overwatch League, which is kind of a red flag if you really think about it. Doa is leaving but is open to the idea of coming back to Overwatch League as more of a freelance caster. And same thing with Puckett. Puckett is going freelance as well. Now, that's something that Golden Boy has done. He's freelance. And I believe Shox in the LEC is freelance as well. So this is not exactly them going away permanently, but this is that exclusive contract, that recognizable face and voice gone from Overwatch League in its crucial season, like you said, Joey, with homestands taking place all over the world, where that recognizable face, that recognizable voice, that recognizable person who's able to paint that picture for the viewers, all three of those guys are gone. That's a huge, huge issue.
Right, and in so many different areas of the industry right now, we're seeing how much exclusivity matters. You look at the console market. PlayStation won this console generation because of their exclusive titles. Now you look at the streaming market. Mixer's buying these huge exclusive streamers, and it's bumping their platform numbers up. Twitch, on the other hand, is now having to spend to keep streamers on their platform. Facebook, Mixer, Caffeine, all of these platforms vying for these exclusive contracts. I mean, there's just so much exclusivity going on right now. And for the Overwatch League to lose these players, to lose these commentators, these casters, this host, there's a lot to be lost there in that exclusivity. Now, let's say Overwatch and League of Legends is having a giant tournament the same day. Now they don't have these star casters locked in for that tournament necessarily. They would have to overbid something like a League of Legends or a Rocket League or whatever else is happening that weekend. So there's a lot more on the line now. The casters, on the other hand, that could be a nice payday. But for the league itself, now you're losing that exclusive deal. Now you're losing that top priority, potentially, depending on what the dates end up being for some of these tournaments, as well as the creative differences that Monty did mention. So a whole bunch of things going into this. On top of that, John, the synergy between these two. You do not come up with synergy overnight. You guys want to see how bad our synergy was at first? Go listen to the first episode of the Love Left podcast.
Please don't. Please don't listen to Love episode one. It was so bad.
Stuff has to be built over time. It's just synergy between two people, between a group of people. It doesn't come overnight. Monty and Doa have, it's got to be 7 to 10 years of experience together, right?
Yeah, it's. I know it's at least seven.
It's quite a while. Yeah, I think it's seven.
Yeah, it's probably north of seven, but I want to say at the very least it's seven.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's 7 years of experience these guys have built up together. They know each other so well. They know how each other calls a game, and they're able to mesh. Some of these other casters who have been around for two seasons, they're starting to mesh here and there, and there's great moments, but it's nothing like having 7 years together. It's definitely something that has to be built on. That foundation is very firm with these two. And the last thing, John, Overwatch is not an easy game to explain to people. You look at something like Rocket League, the ball goes in the goal, you score a point. When you look at something like Overwatch, there's so many different heroes, but those heroes can change within the match as well. And then there's all these roles and these different types of styles to play on a map, whether it be escort, whether it be hold or domination, control. There's just so many different aspects to the game of Overwatch, and having casters that have been around for so long, League is not as complicated of a game if you look at the map and the game style itself, just because it's one game mode and one map. The map does change here and there, but there are a number of heroes with a number of abilities, and someone like a Monty and a Doa were able to come in and bring their experience from casting those games, especially the play-by-play in complicated situations of those games, and bring that into Overwatch League and really shape the way that casting is today in Overwatch League. So big credit to them. I think it's a huge loss for Overwatch League. Hopefully they come back, whether it be in a freelance role or possibly in a full-time role later down the line if creative differences get resolved. But for now, it does seem like they are parting ways, and there could be some potential later on. But for now, I think it's a little bit sad for the Overwatch League losing these talents.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's not a knock against the other casters and the desk analysts or anything for Overwatch League. But when you're an established industry professional like Monty, Doa, and Puckett, that is just massive shoes to fill. Let's be real here. Shoutcasting goes beyond the gameplay. There's a whole production side of it. There's, you know, everything from like, okay, you know, certain matchups have certain storylines that we want to go with, or Team A playing Team B. These guys have drawn, you know, each of the four times they played each other, or whatever the storyline is. They build that narrative. They're able to do that. There's production meetings that they go to. There's test runs. There's different ideas. And that chemistry, Joey, if there's one thing casters can't do, they can't hide. If they make a mistake, the entire world sees it or hears it. And when it happens, it's incredibly noticeable, because that's what people are listening to. That's what people are watching. If you make a mistake in the game and it's being streamed, there's so many other things going on. There's a good chance a good majority of people watching have missed it. But if you're calling the game and Reinhardt is using his ultimate and you call it as a Junkrat ult, that's incredibly noticeable. Or if you mispronounce something, or if you say the wrong team name, you know, not saying that that has happened in Overwatch League, but it is something that is always feared for new up and coming casters, is are they going to be able to talk and explain the game with the production aspect of it, with having a producer talking to you in your ear while you're doing all of this. So that's something that Monty, Doa, and Puckett were incredibly good at doing. They didn't make mistakes, and if they did make mistakes, they were great at covering it up with humor. That is the entertainment aspect of it, and that's something that's going to be sorely missed. It's going to be very interesting to see where Overwatch League goes from here. Now, Jake from the Houston's team, Houston Outlaws, is making the move from professional Overwatch player to casting. Now, he's good. He's good at what he does. He's done it a couple times and was very impressive. Not all pros can go and be casters. Just because you play the game doesn't mean you're going to be good at explaining the game or being able to kind of paint that picture or being able to do it on camera in front of millions of viewers or in front of an arena packed full of people. There's a whole different thing that happens with casters that Jake has been able to do. So I'm happy for Jake making that transition over. But again, like we said, and I'll quit beating the dead horse here, it's going to be a very interesting season for Overwatch League and for the product they put out for gamers and esport fans' consumption. It's going to be very interesting to see where they go from here.
100%. And I think just the final point on that, if you look at Monty and Doa, like when the Overwatch League began in season one of our biggest criticisms were the way the casters talked. Everything was just on hype level 110. It felt like every single play, like Soldier 76 walks down the street and they're just yelling everything. And it was like, okay, people, what should we actually be hyped about? Where are the ultimates being played? What map control is being taken? I don't really care if someone's shooting a few bullets or walking down a street. So I think that was one of the biggest things, and I don't know where they learned it from. They could have learned it from just watching themselves. The producer could have done it. But I want to think that part of that was probably Monty and Doa's experience coming in, saying, hey, guys, I would approach it this way from our experience with League of Legends, or this is what we've learned from casting esports. Like, Monty is not the most humble guy. We've seen it many times that he can be a bit cocky. But I think in a professional environment like that, he probably has the ability to mentor other people. And at least from the posts I've seen, I would assume that Monty and Doa were kind of like older brothers in a sense to some of these younger casters really making their way onto the scene. They were able to help out in those areas. And I think more than having them on screen and on voice, I guess, over making these calls, I think people that are becoming new casters in the scene are definitely going to miss their expertise as well. Moving on though, John, you and I being fellow casters ourselves, casual casters, we'll call ourselves, aspiring casters maybe even, we do have a lot to say on this topic. We could probably go all night, but for the good of our audience, we do have a lot more to touch on, and we're going to jump over to our partnerships, where Facebook has made a big acquisition. They continue to bolster themselves. They're forcing gaming. They're trying to jump into streaming. They're trying to bolster their gaming forces in general, picking up companies. Now their newest acquisition is Madrid-based cloud gaming company PlayGiga. John, they're paying $78 million to pick up PlayGiga here. PlayGiga has, I believe, 300-something games on the platform. They're well-known. They're a company that's continuing to bring itself up and build itself up. Cloud gaming seems to be the future. Microsoft already has a huge footing in it, Amazon and Google as well. Now we're seeing Facebook here. They want to continue to jump into gaming. They see the money being made in the industry. They want to find another way in, and PlayGiga is what they're trying next.
Jerry, I'm about to make an analogy that some of our younger listeners may not understand. So I invite them to Google what MySpace is real quick. Some of the older millennials will understand this a little bit more. When MySpace first came out, whenever it was a platform. It was the first social media platform, really, it felt like. And what really made its name was bands being able to promote their music. And then with Facebook and Twitter and everything else coming out, MySpace kind of just died off. Like, you know, Tom sold the company. The new company in charge of it just really didn't care all that much. People just kind of migrated away. Well, recently, MySpace is trying to rebrand itself as that place where bands can go to promote their music again and trying to relaunch MySpace. Well, now here's the issue. Bands don't go to MySpace. They go to SoundCloud. They go to Instagram. They may use Twitter, but mainly SoundCloud and Instagram are where bands go now. Up-and-coming bands that want to try to make it go to get their music out there, especially SoundCloud with the last couple of years with the boom of SoundCloud rappers, mumble rappers, and all these new genres of rap coming out. That's where they go. This is what Facebook is trying to do. Facebook has become so irrelevant. They're forcing themselves into gaming when no one's using their platform. They're essentially in that phase where they're MySpace rebranding themselves as music's best friend, as this is where you can go to get your music heard, to get discovered. And I don't know a single person who uses MySpace. Facebook, yes, while it does still have a very large population, it is a very much older population, something we've hit on multiple times on this show. This is a crazy forced move. This is a $78 million forced move. And that's how much stupid money these guys have, is that they're able to acquire a cloud-based gaming company when cloud gaming already has a bad rap because of Google Stadia. $78 million to force Facebook into gaming to try to get the younger gamer generation back onto Facebook or even to Facebook, when really they're on Instagram, they're on Snapchat, they're on TikTok, they're on everywhere else but Facebook. To me, I think this is a waste of money. I think PlayGiga is making money and they're getting out of the game, and kudos to them. They've done what they needed to do. For Facebook, I think this is a waste of money, and I don't think it's going to help them out at all.
Yeah, I think there's a few different ways to look at that. So if you look at Facebook as an early adopter of gaming, in a sense, they had Farmville. Farmville was a huge hit at the time. I think even Candy Crush had a Facebook version. There are a few other games out there. I remember some like Mafia 1 at one point. They were like Flash and Java-based games. They were killing it with those. They were doing absolutely well. That was part of the reason Facebook grew so fast. Yes, obviously the whole college part was one of the biggest parts, but then when you add these games in, this is what was bringing some relatives in. This was what was keeping people on the platform. Yeah, scrolling through, reading statuses, looking at pictures, but a lot of the revenue that they made was from ads and from games being played and purchased. Now you look at the platform, there are so many other places to get games. You can get them in your mobile device, which was not a thing when Facebook had these other things. So now that I can play Farmville on my phone, not that I play Farmville, let's get that clear right here from the start. But what I'm saying is there's so many more ways to access these mobile games. So Facebook has lost their footing in the gaming industry. Now they're trying to bring it in with streaming. I like streamers like Disguised Toast. I like streamers like Zero. They're not going to bring me to Facebook to watch streams, though. I think they're talented. I think they're fun. But again, I'm not coming to watch Facebook gaming just because you bought a couple streamers. A lot of people would argue the same thing for Mixer, even though they bought higher name streamers like Ninja and Shroud. It's just, it's not quite there yet with that type of market. Then you look at this move. Like you said, cloud gaming is an interesting place. Google Stadia got panned. Microsoft xCloud or Project xCloud has a lot of high recommendations based on reviews, but it's not been officially released yet, so the general public doesn't quite know yet. Then you look at a few other things here. The one thing you mentioned, so Instagram. Facebook owns Instagram. That is what's keeping Facebook alive, in a sense. But one of the biggest issues that I see is they don't know how to tie it into one another. It feels like Instagram and Facebook are distant from one another. Maybe that's because they don't want to confuse the branding. They want to keep people on Instagram and not relate it to Facebook. But at the same point, if you're making all these gaming-related moves that are so targeted at the newer generation, all that generation's on Instagram. You're not tying the two in together. So these Facebook moves are separated on a platform that some people would argue is dying versus your other fresh platform that has these viewers that actually look at esports and gaming, and you're not intertwining the two very well. That, to me, is the biggest issue with this acquisition. Anything else over there, Spicy Giga?
No, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think Instagram is where Facebook really needs to focus, and if they're going to expand anywhere, put gaming on Instagram. Put live gaming on Instagram. Is it going to work? I don't know. I honestly don't know. But it stands a better chance than it does on Facebook. You know, I remember when Facebook bought Instagram like 6-7 years ago. I don't even know if it was that long, maybe. And that was a huge deal because Instagram blew up in popularity that much. And why not? It's totally doable. You can post videos on there. I'm pretty sure it just takes some coding here and there. I know it's more complicated than that, people. But it's something that can be done. We see it on Twitch. We see it on Mixer. We saw it on every other stream platform that has a mobile app. Simple as that. Just create your own mobile app for live gaming. You know, YouTube even did it. YouTube had YouTube gaming for a while, and I still think they should probably go back to it. But it's able to be done. Facebook doesn't want to do it. If Facebook does do it, it's going to probably 2030 before they do it, because that's how far behind they are with everything else. So it's going to be interesting to see how much money they keep throwing at this while mismanaging the whole situation.
So I actually, I just went to Facebook Gaming for my first time. I actually didn't know how to get there. I just kind of Google searched it. This layout is rough. The viewership is even rougher. The top guy on here has 165 views right now. On their front page, they have a guy with 4 views in the top 10. This is not doing too well. This is really not doing too well. They need to clean it up. I'm not a big fan of the Facebook UI in general at this point in life. I feel like it's very cluttered. Yeah, you have to make revenue some way. You're putting ads here and there. I don't like the look of Facebook groups. I don't like the look of Facebook pages. I feel like it doesn't feel like a modern UI anymore for me. And I feel like the same thing translates over here in the gaming part. It doesn't look that clean to me.
Their Facebook gaming logo looks almost like a ripoff of Logitech's Gaming G series logo. Just it's like put together so it's a box versus it being separate. I mean, a little more curvy. Yeah, it's bad. It looks like Facebook with video. Like, that's...
It's bad.
It's bad. It's bad. It's real bad.
It's, yeah. No thank you. In other news, more exciting news, John. CSGO. You know that game, Counter-Strike Global Offensive? It's been out for about 8 years now.
Never heard of it.
It just hit its concurrent player record this past, I believe it's past week and a half, over like the Christmas, Hanukkah break, that range, the holiday break, they called it. 760,000 concurrent players for Counter-Strike Global Offensive, a game that's 8 years old. You look at League of Legends, 10 years old, hitting player records still today. CSGO, 8 years old, hitting player records still today as far as concurrent viewers go. I mean, this is just great. Or I have concurrent viewers here. It's concurrent players. But overall, it's just crazy to see these games that have been out for close to a decade or over a decade now continuing to grow in players' numbers. CSGO does not have the prettiest graphics. It is not the best-looking game. There are plenty of better-looking games out there, yet it continues to beat out a lot of modern-day shooters. Part of it, you can argue, is the strategic aspect. A lot of people see the Call of Duty franchise as more of a run and gun. While you look at the Counter-Strike Global Offensive franchise, there's a lot more about holding points and using utility with grenades differently. And the whole economy system is a whole nother layer of expertise and tactical aspects to it. It amazes me that a game like Counter-Strike continues to grow. A game that a lot of people are expecting to be remade multiple times now. But again, the economy in it, players are spending a ton of money in it. Players are spending a ton of real life money in this game for simple skins, just like they are for League of Legends. But these older games just continuing to defy the odds, doing what very few games, maybe Super Smash Brothers being the only one that continues to find that cult following as a very, very old game that continues to build up its player base today. Even Super Smash never really hit these limits, but Counter-Strike Global Offensive into the high hundreds of thousands, League of Legends into the millions. Absolutely amazing to see.
Yeah, and you know, if there's one thing CSGO and Smash have in common, it like you said, Joey, it's that cult following. It's that strong player base that they have. And that is what can really draw more people to your game, to that scene, is having that rabid fan base that is honestly like so in love, for lack of better terminology, with this game that they're able to talk to their friends about it. They're able to talk to people in their class about it or in their workplace or wherever like-minded or open-minded gamer type people may be. They're able to talk about this game and share that passion, and that will draw people in. You know, Joey, like League of Legends, a game that's been around for 10 plus years now, a game that, you know, was essentially boy, if we go back to the beta of this game when it first launched, it looks completely different nowadays. But it's a game that truly grew through grassroots effort. You know, Riot Games was a developer that just kind of popped up out of nowhere. They just kind of did their thing and they went with it. There's a great documentary about it on Netflix, and you can see early prototypes of the game, and it was bad. It looked awful. The entire strategy point, the idea behind it, while it was an upgraded Defense of the Ancients from Warcraft 3 multiplayer map, it literally still looked as bad as the graphics from Warcraft 3. The gameplay was spotty. It was bad, and so on and so forth. But they were able to develop and refine it into what League of Legends is today. And League of Legends has really grown because of that player fan base. Same thing here with CSGO. A game that people have thought was dead multiple times has managed to resurface and become relevant over and over again and grow its fan base and grow its player base. CSGO tournaments are still some of the highest attended and the highest grossing tournaments out there in esports. I mean, CSGO, I believe, was one of the first ones to have a cable TV deal with TBS. That was massive with E-League. So, you know, for a game that only has that just hit 760,000 concurrent players, they have done quite a bit, and it's because of that passionate fan base.
Absolutely amazing. I love to see games like that grow. Games continue to defy the odds to show that, hey, just because we've been around for a while doesn't mean we can't stay around for a long time forward. Continuing to bring up that concurrent player number is great, and I absolutely love to see CSGO continue to grow, and I hope it does for many years to come. John, sidebar, he's not in chat tonight, but Squirtle has been making a lot of memes for us as a spectator and a viewer. Your description of Super Smash Brothers fans as rabid, I think would be...
rabid in a good way.
But I'm imagining like Super Smash Brothers fans like foaming at the mouth, playing on their Switch.
those are only Kirby players.
Absolutely good stuff there. Speaking of interesting things, John, we've seen the military continue to make investments in esports. Some of the branches have made their own esports teams. Other ones have looked at recruiting in that particular area, while esports in general has become a big thing for the military. And you look at some of the military aspects as well. The Xbox controller is one of the things they've used for piloting drones and different forms of military tactical plays. Now you're looking at this move right here by the U.S. Navy, which is set to reallocate the television and Super Bowl advertising budget to esports. This is according to Vice Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Burke via TalkEsport.com. John, this to me is huge. This is something that has been, it feels like age old, the centennial, the NFL Super Bowl game has been around for so long, and people pay millions, if not billions of dollars on these ads. I don't even know what they run for nowadays, but those highlight spots are huge, huge money. Now the Navy's saying, hey, it's great having the Super Bowl out there, but we feel that moving our money to esports could be more beneficial for us. So it might not be a long-term move. It could be short-term. They could just try it for a year or two and then move it back. But at least for now, they're going to dive it into esports. They feel like there are more younger players looking at that, or maybe more players that they're looking to recruit for something like these drone handling skills in the esports industry as opposed to those watching the Super Bowl.
Now, this is kind of funny because I believe it was either the Navy or the Air Force. I can't remember which branch it was. But the Boston Major where Cloud9 won, there was this huge Kotaku article that came out talking about how, you know, the military is infiltrating video games and they're trying to recruit people and they're trying to get people to join their ranks and to go around the world wreaking war all over the place. Now, first off, I can tell you, as a product of a military family, that is, you know, yeah, the military is there to protect that country. And in this case, you know, the United States. But I hate to tell you, most jobs in the military are not exactly war based. So it is a legitimate career path, and I think there's nothing wrong with them advertising with esports, within video games even. I mean, some of the best-selling video games out there are war-based video games. So I feel like that argument that people make about the military branches kind of recruiting, using advertising funds in these games and these tournaments, I think that's kind of lame and kind of overdone. So throwing that aside, this is something video games has hit on for decades, it feels like. The idea that the military goes to gamers for that next generation of fighters. So that next generation of, you know, defense of a country or war tactics, you know, what's the way that we can continue to do X, Y, and Z? You know, if we're in war, how can we push back the enemy, you know, with losing as few people as possible? And the idea of these cyber-based soldiers has come up time and time again. Most recently, a big popular one is D.Va in Overwatch. She is a professional video gamer that is also a soldier in the South Korean army in the mech program. So, you know, it's an idea that has been out there forever. And now we're starting to see that come to fruition in our own lifetime, that this is the next step for the military, you know, for, you know, maybe those more developed countries that have that technology able to put that to use, is developing these cyber soldiers, if you will, or these mech suits that help protect soldiers and let them do things that normal humans can not do, like maybe carry 4 Gatling guns or something absolutely crazy like that. So really, this is just something that video games and really sci-fi culture has predicted for years, that professional gamers and gamers in general are that next generation of soldier, if you will, for these branches. It's not surprising to me, and that's the way technology has gone. So why not tap into that market? We all know the esports scene, the average age for a lot of these gamers, 16 to maybe mid-20s, and after that, what do you do? You're kind of washed up at the age of 25 in esports. What are you going to do after that? You know, are you going to be a caster? We talked about that earlier in this episode. Not everyone's able to do that. Not everyone's able to be as skilled and talented to make that transition. So what do? They own an organization? Do they make that much money as a professional player that they're able to do that next? Are they going to become a coach, a team manager? Or are they going to look for a different career path? I honestly think that this is a legitimate thing that the U.S. Navy is doing. Joey, you hit on it. Other branches are using that Xbox controller to control drones. Microsoft and the Air Force, I know, have had a partnership for quite a long time doing this. The Navy is no different. They're looking for that next level, that next generation of sailors to be able to use the internet, to be able to use, you know, new technology in almost a game sense with a controller to maybe fly missiles around, maybe fly Navy drones themselves. You know, there's the possibility is endless, really. I like this move by the Navy. I know a lot of people are going to have issues with it, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I have nothing bad to say about the military. Yes, I understand the main objective of the military is defense of, you know, the person's country. I get that. Whether you agree with the politics behind it, that's up to you. I won't even touch on that. But there are so many other things that go into the military other than the war aspect of it. And that's why I really do like this move. I think this is going to be great for people growing as a person, looking for that next step after professional gaming. Or maybe you're an amateur gamer and you can't make it to the next level, but you're really good at Ace Combat 8. This is a great opportunity here as well.
Right. And I think you touched on a ton of good points there. Just to touch on a couple more, like emphasize yours a bit further. One of the other things to look at, and maybe not quite as futuristic as you went, but if you look in the present as well, when you're the military, you're looking to recruit younger guys. You don't want to recruit a 50-year-old. You don't want to recruit a middle-aged man, potentially. You want to look at that younger audience, that 16 to 25 range. You want to try to bring in people at a younger age because then they'll last longer. They can continue to climb up ranks, potentially. They're a bit more immune, I guess, to diseases, as well as able to adapt a bit easier because they're not necessarily set in their ways as much as someone who's older. So I think that's another big aspect for the present, as well as what you mentioned with the more futuristic combat as we move to stuff like cyber programs as well. On top of that, I mean, there's just so many different aspects to it that you mentioned as far as the game, like what comes after the esports professional players industry. Yes, they could become a commentator, a coach, a caster. Maybe they can play on the senior tour at some point if esports adds that. You can become a streamer. There's a few options out there outside of going into the regular workforce, but one of the biggest ones out there potentially could be the military. We've seen players, maybe not by their choice necessarily, but someone like Forgiven, who was a top-level ADC, got drafted to the military, did his service, and now he's coming back to the LEC as a player. Again, that's a little bit more out there. It's not as more mainstream as some of these other players, But one of the other stereotypes, if you look at video gamers or nerd culture in general, a lot of people see gamers as overweight or as not really socially acceptable in certain environments. That's not the case in today's day and age anymore. Your mother is probably a gamer. Your son is probably going to be a gamer. I mean, when you look at this with mobile games growing at the rate they are, so many people are gamers and they don't even realize it. I mean, there are so many people who are now categorized as gamers that have no idea that they're even considered a gamer. Like if your mother plays Word Scramble, that's considered gaming nowadays as a mobile game. And there are so many people out there that do not understand that. But when you look at it overall, with all of these aspects, with all of these games now readily accessible, the gamer is not necessarily that one kid who lives in the basement that's 300 pounds and just eats Cheetos all day. It can now be fit people that go to the gym every day. John, you go to the gym practically every day, and you're a gamer. I mean, there's people out there aspiring that are continuing to build up in their career fields, that are continuing to grow as gamers and as professionals and people as well. So I think the categorizing of gamer is not necessarily a generalization anymore, and it's becoming more and more mainstream. So you can get those fit people. You don't necessarily have to have that guy piloting that cyber drone years from now. It could be someone who's actually a gamer who's actually quite fit and goes to the gym regularly. I mean, if you look at EU teams, LEC, yeah, we talked about their academy systems, but one of the other things I think that's really good that the LEC enforces that the LCS doesn't, to my knowledge, is going to the gym. They encourage players to stay healthy, to go to the gym, to get exercise. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing with esports as they transition from esports and gamer players to becoming more like esport actual athletes, because they're building their body as well as their mental game. So I think that's one of the things we're seeing here, and I think the Navy is being very good and proactive with this move. I actually really like that move a lot. 2019 Twitch stats. So yeah, there's other platforms. We have Caffeine, it's bubbling a little bit. We have Mixer, they're mixing things up. Facebook, yeah, they're Facebook. But Twitch is the biggest platform. It has been for years. It continues to look like it will be for 2020 and many years beyond. Let's look at some of the stats though. John, Riot Games, they led all Twitch channels in hours watched in 2019. They had more than 112 hours watched with 102 million the year prior. So they're up 10 million hours watched compared to their previous year. Riot Games, obviously, League of Legends is the game they own. They do a lot of esports events on their Twitch channel as well. And this is just showing that esports can really move into viewership numbers and continue to grow, with 10 million more views being added this past year.
Just wait until competitive TFT kicks off and they start streaming that. TFT has exploded in ways I never thought it would. I have even fallen into the trap of TFT myself. I actually tend to play that more than I play on the Rift anymore. I think that's only going to help Riot. I think that's a good thing. It's not surprising that they're number one in 2019. I think it's great they grew by 10,000, or probably 10 million views, 10,000. But I think it's going to grow even more with that competitive TFT scene. And when those new titles that were teased to us come out as well, whether it's in 2020, 2021, or 2022, I feel like that is going to increase views and interest in Riot Games and other Riot titles as well. I think Riot is positioning themselves to really be the Goliath to everything else in video games and esports right now.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, the TFT comparison is great. TFT has faltered a bit number-wise. They've started to bring back down from the initial hype. But something like Project A is one that really I look at. When you look at Counter-Strike Global Offensive continuing to bring their concurrent player numbers up 8 years into the game, then you have Project A that's based on Counter-Strike with abilities built in an economy system. That's saying, let's marry Counter-Strike, League of Legends, and Overwatch together into something. That to me is just going to blow up. I think that could be a giant game. The fighting community is hungry for something different. They have Soul Calibur, Tekken, Marvel vs. Capcom, Super Smash Bros., but they want something new. They want something different. Xbox might put Killer Instinct back out there. That could be a competitor. But the other one to look at is League of Legends. If they're adding a fighting game, like they said, we don't know how far in development it is, but a fighting game under Riot with their free-to-play model where players can play players and buy skins they want, that could be another huge success too. Like you said, Riot is really positioning themselves. I don't want to make the comparison to say they're going to be the Amazon of the gaming industry, but I think they're really positioning themselves as a very big power player, with them already being one of the top bringing in viewers and revenue as one game under their belt. When we look at the comparison with Epic, who has multiple games, Fortnite obviously being the biggest one, now Riot's saying, we're about to compete on a lot of different fronts. That to me is scary if I'm anywhere else in the gaming industry. And if I'm Tencent, who owns 100% of Riot Games, I'm feeling really nice right now.
It's kind of funny, just real quick. You mentioned Epic. I just want to throw this out there. Remind me of something. My nephew was talking to me the other day, and he came up to me after he discovered something about Epic Games. I said, what's that? He goes, Fortnite's been around forever. I go, yeah, as a game, it has been around forever. The Battle Royale is something new that they've done, and they've really, you know, kicked butt at it. He goes, yeah, they're like old. I'm just like, like Epic's not that old. Like Fortnite's been around for a while. They have that save the world mode, that kind of like zombie type play mode.
Right.
But that Battle Royale is what really made them that money. You know, I don't think, like when I first heard of the Battle Royale mode for Fortnite and I downloaded the game, I was like, oh, there's another game mode here? Like I've never even heard of it prior to that. So yeah, Epic's really made their bread and butter with Fortnite with the Battle Royale mode, but they've been around for a while. So it was just kind of interesting that, you know, we're talking on Epic and how they're growing. But in reality, you know, Fortnite's been around forever, it feels like. But it wasn't until like a year and a half ago that the Fortnite boom and craze happened. So it's kind of interesting.
No, I mean, Epic's been huge. You look at Gears of War. Gears of War has been around for over a decade. Epic had that franchise for the first three titles. When Gears of War 1 was released, I think it won Game of the Year that year. That was an Epic game as well. So they've been around for quite a while. The Unreal Engine is under Epic's name. Many, many games are made under the Unreal Engine. So Epic is killing it, but so is Riot, obviously killing it here with Twitch viewership hours watched. So again, Riot Games, 112 million. They're up 10 million from last year. The second place for 2019 goes to Overwatch League with 89 million. That is a huge drop off in comparison. So you can argue different aspects here. League of Legends, obviously a bigger player count. Obviously the esports scene has been around longer. Overwatch League, I think for being in their second season, 90 million views is not bad at all, but it is kind of crazy to see the drop off so far. So I think one of the things Overwatch League can take from this is how do we optimize to be closer to those viewership numbers at Riot? One of the big things is Overwatch League is one league versus Riot that has control of many different leagues over many different regions. So that definitely plays a big key into it. So I think Overwatch League can be very happy with 90 million as the second overall, but it is crazy to see it Riot Games that far ahead. Third place goes to Tfue, an individual streamer, 88 million for Tfue, 1 million shy of Overwatch League, John. So we have these huge leagues with games every week. Overwatch League has usually 4 days of games. Tfue right behind him. Tfue, obviously, the contract dispute. There are many issues that came up throughout the year with him. One of the other things to keep in mind with Tfue's numbers, they could be slightly skewed. I believe he was the number three streamer on Twitch for most of the year, but then we did see Ninja and Shroud leave. Ninja ended up streaming on Twitch for 7 months and Shroud on there for 10 months. And then we ended up seeing their numbers decrease, obviously, when they left. Shroud with those set, or with the 10 months, actually. I got these numbers mixed up. Shroud ended up with 60 million over 10 months. Ninja ended up with 46 million over the 8 months that he streamed, or 7 months that he streamed on the platform before switching over to Mixer. So Ninja ended up in that 10th spot with 46 million. Shroud ended up in that 7th spot with 60 million. So just a few numbers to throw out there. I think that probably skewed it a bit. Once Ninja left, obviously some of those viewers went to Shroud. Some of those viewers went to Tfue. Once Shroud left, some of those viewers probably went to Tfue as well. So it is crazy, though, overall, John, to look at individual streamers continuing to be up there and competing with these giant leagues that have many, many more hours and viewers as far as the team revenue that they're able to bring in with team viewers and player viewers and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, and really, what I'm curious for 2020 is will Tfue be able to continue this trend of keeping those Ninja viewers on Twitch coming back to his stream, those Shroud viewers on Twitch coming back to his stream for a full year now? And if he is able to, there's a good chance we could see Tfue beat Overwatch League in viewership numbers, which would not be good for Overwatch League. Overwatch League struggling with viewership numbers from Season 1 to Season 2. Really, halfway through Season 1, they started struggling with numbers. Season 2 was a struggle as well. That is something to keep an eye on in 2020 if you're really deep into like the ecosystem of, if you will, of esports and gaming, is watching this matchup with Tfue and Overwatch League and these viewership numbers.
Right, and we don't have the full breakdown either. I don't know how many days of the week Tfue streams regularly and how many hours on those days of the week either, versus Overwatch League and their 4 days of matches plus rebroadcasts and all of that. So we don't have the full breakdown. We just have that raw viewership number. But either way, 1 million between the two, 89 and 88 respectively, with Overwatch League and Tfue. So exciting stuff there for streamers. Overall, I feel like viewership numbers are up across the board. So we continue to see live streaming of gameplay continuing to grow, whether it be on Twitch, whether it be on other platforms like Mixer, who also saw a big bump this year. Caffeine and Facebook Gaming making those investments as well. 2019 video game revenue, John, some fun stats here too. Free-to-play games accounted for $4 out of every $5 spent on digital games in 2019, according to Dot Esports. We've said it hundreds of times. It amazes me that some games, like an Overwatch, for example, continue to sell full-price games as opposed to making it a free-to-play game and releasing content in the way that we've seen League of Legends and CSGO go to. It just, it seems to work so much better that way in today's day and age. While I get RPG games and different games like that, like if a Fable were to come out for Microsoft, for example, I completely get if that's a full price game, if it's going to be a single player story, maybe it has some multiplayer aspects to it, but it's meant to be a single game. If it's a game like a League of Legends or a CSGO or an Overwatch that's meant to live for a long time, I think free to play games are the way to go at this point. Offer in-game loot, whether it be skins, allow some incentives to earn stuff like that, but also have some stuff locked behind a door. I don't like the idea of loot boxes. I've said it 100 times before. I've only spent a little bit of money in Overwatch for loot boxes because I want to know what I'm getting. Riot Games, on the other hand, I've spent a pretty penny in League of Legends because when I see a nice skin, I would like that skin. I know I'm going to get that skin, so I'm more willing to spend my money there. Also in games that are free to play, like on Xbox Game Pass. Gears of War, for example. I really enjoyed playing Gears of War. I didn't spend a single penny on it when for every other Gears of War game, I spent about $60 to get the game itself. Now I'm looking at a game that I've bought free-to-play, or bought free-to-play, downloaded free-to-play via Xbox Game Pass, and now I'm like, I want to find ways to support the developers. So what do? I look at in-game content. I look at cool weapon skins. How can I throw $5, $10 their way? That's how I'm doing it nowadays. So again, it's not necessarily one of those full free-to-play games, but via a service like Xbox Game Pass, it becomes a free game for me with that subscription price, and I'm more willing to pay for content in that if I didn't pay $60 up front. I think that's just going to be more and more a trend as we go forward. Anything else on that one, sir?
Nope. I'm good.
One more stat for this video game. This one's a little surprising, too. Digital games raked in $120 billion last year. John, that is three times more than all movies combined. We're looking at the movie industry, and there's a bunch of different aspects. You can argue theaters are starting to die out. Not as many people are going to movie theaters, but with the whole movie industry, that brings in streaming as well. That brings in digital purchases as well. We're looking at the full scope of the movie industry, and video games still completely eclipse that three times over.
Yeah, that's I think that's a warning to Hollywood, really, when it comes to it. I think a lot of it has to do with just more what a lot of people perceive the Hollywood greed is, especially when you're paying almost $20 to go see a single movie. You know, the experience in movie theaters, not exactly the greatest. I believe even when compared to the music industry with music licensing, I believe the comparison I saw was 100 listens to one song equals one physical album purchase. So, you know, these mega bands that can like get millions and millions of views. Yeah, they can still make decent amount of money, but still think about that. 100 listens equals one album. One album generally costs what? $12 to $15 if it's just, you know, your standard 10 to 15 song CD. Hollywood has overshadowed the music industry, and now video games are overshadowing that. So it's, video games are absolutely demolishing the music industry, absolutely demolishing Hollywood and the movie industry. And you have to take a look at the reasons why. Video games are more accessible. They don't cost an arm and a leg. You pay a $5 fee on a mobile game that's really well done with incredibly well-designed graphics for a phone, and you have the game for however long you want it until you delete it. And guess what? It's tied to your your Apple account, so you can always re-download it. So it's not that big of a deal. With movies, if you want to see it a second time in theaters, you have to pay another $20. You know, it's about the overall experience. You don't get it anymore unless you're paying a monthly fee for music, which I'm completely fine with doing. And with movies, if the experience at the theater isn't good, people are going to wait to watch on Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, whatever streaming service you want to use. They're going to wait because it's not worth the hassle of driving, getting the ticket, finding your seat. The food is more expensive than the freaking ticket is at the movie theaters. They're doing it to themselves, and video games are taking advantage of it.
Oh, absolutely. It's just crazy to see the growth. And just to throw a couple more numbers out there, John, so some of this is crazy. In the movie industry, Avengers Endgame, huge movie, great release. It grossed $858 million U.S. dollars in its opening weekend. In comparison with a game, Grand Theft Auto V's release in 2013 grossed $1 billion in 3 days alone. So you want to look at the growth of the music industry versus the movie industry versus the video game. One game, 7 years ago at this point, grossed $1 billion in its first 3 days. And now today, one of the biggest movies released is not even hitting $1 billion in its opening weekend. So it's just, it's crazy to see the growth overall when you look at the video game industry, especially we didn't even account for it as much, but the mobile gaming industry, that continues to be one of the biggest growing segments as well. So video games are killing it in entertainment right now. Respawn CEO Vince Zambella. This is the same Vince Zambella that came from Infinity Ward, my favorite Call of Duty maker at the time, back when they did COD Modern Warfare or COD 4 Modern Warfare, the original, not any of that other trash that came afterwards, the original, the OG. Vince Zambella led up that studio, and now he's over there making action with EA. What was it, Apex Legends, John? Apex Legends, remember that game? That small game that released in March, it just popped off all over the place, or February. Absolutely killed it. EA stock soared. The viewership numbers, the player numbers. Apex was absolutely demolishing the Battle Royale category at the time. It took viewers from Fortnite, players from Fortnite. Now Fortnite back on top of its throwing a Battle Royale. But Apex not doing too shabby itself with its recent, what was it, Hollow Day? Hollow Day was their event? It's cute. A little Mirage action. Good times there. But Vin Zambella doing really well this year with the Respawn Entertainment, with Apex Legends. He's going to expand his portfolio. He's now going to take over EA's DICE LA studio as well. I don't 100% know what games DICE made in LA. I think it supports another studio over in Europe, but I want to say DICE does Battlefield, correct? Is one of their biggest titles?
Battlefield is one of their biggest titles, along with Star Wars Battlefront is another one that came out of that. And the Need for Speed game, Hot Pursuit, was another big one as well. But the longest running series is Battlefield for them.
Yeah, so when you look at their big games, you can argue the car game is big, but I also think Forza is bigger. I think Gran Turismo is bigger. But Battlefield is up there. Battlefield is, it's not quite Call of Duty. It's not quite Halo, but it's had a huge player base. It has a very, I don't even want to say a cult following, because it's big enough that you don't really have to call it a cult following. Just because it's continued to grow, it's continued to pull in people. The graphics are amazing in Battlefield games. But like you said, I think one of the biggest things here is Star Wars. We look at Respawn, they just made a Star Wars game. It was hugely acclaimed. It did extremely well as far as sales go, as far as reviews go. Now you have the Battlefield IP over there at DICE. Now you're saying, hey, Vince, we like what you did with Star Wars. Disney seems to be happy as well. Why don't we let you have your hand at something a little bigger, something with a bit more of a multiplayer aspect to it with Star Wars? You like it? Is that getting your lightsaber at the ready? see, that's how to wake John up on the episode. we do have some good stuff ahead, John, as well. You and I will be casting a tournament with the Virginia Youth Soccer Association this upcoming weekend, a little FIFA action going on there. You can check that out on their channel. We'll put that in the show notes. You and I are excited. We've done a lot of FIFA events. We've done it with quite a few organizations, including MLS Pro Team DC United. We love some FIFA. It's a lot of fun. Come check out the stream, guys. You'll enjoy it. But on top of that, John, we also have esports news coming up. Not this weekend, but later down the road. It is the return of League of Legends in the pro scene, the LCS and LEC. John, they've married up this time. Oh. There's no 1 week, 2 week gap between start times and splits. We're going to see the LCS and the LEC kick off on the same weekend. Thank the Bagorn Buzz. It is finally happening. They're back. That's something an OTN community member says. I thought it'd be fun to throw in here.
The what?
The Bagorn Buzz. Hashtag or shout out to Jim Harbs. He's the one that says that over in the OTN chat. But I think this is great. I think now we, as viewers, as people, you and I, not everyone like us, we like to watch the LEC and the LCS. This gives us that opportunity to see it in real time. We don't have to guess who's going into playoffs. We don't have to guess who's getting bye weeks here and there. We can see every team play every week for both regions starting now on January 25th. I'm excited for that. On top of that, there's a lot of other things happening that weekend. Call of Duty League, it's been making a lot of format changes. They're moving to more of a tournament format so that the Blizzard Activision employees can further develop the Overwatch League and support it, making these big steps into the homestand weekends for Season 3. On top of that, Call of Duty is still opening. It's going to happen that week in January. And then Genesis, a giant Smash and fighting game community tournament, will be taking place as well. So January 25th, the episode after that weekend, is going to be a big one, ladies and gentlemen. Anything else you want to say to our fans, our audience, our viewers over here, John?
Yeah, with the LCS and the LEC actually starting at the same time, that means no mistakes trying to figure out what week it is between the LCS and the LEC here on the Level Up Podcast. Joey, both are going to be week one at the exact same time. It's not going to be like, oh, in week one in the LCS and week seven in the LEC, because a month and a half later makes total sense as an example. That might be one of the smartest moves Riot's done in a long time, is going back to pairing those two up. Because let's be real here, when it comes to Western-based League of Legends, those are the two big regions, is the LCS and the LEC. It's crazy not to have them paired up. That would be like the LCK and the LPL, you know, just being 3 weeks apart from each other also. It just doesn't make sense. Let people in the same region enjoy those regions' games in the same time. Don't make it wonky and confusing for everyone. It's not worth it. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud, where Joey's going to be dropping his next rap mixtape. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, there are other ways for you to interact with us in the show. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram. Yes, owned by Facebook. You can also head over to Facebook while it's still around, and Twitter. Find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, we stream regularly on Twitch as well. That's twitch.tv/OTN_live. This podcast, Level Up Podcast, Monday nights around 7:15, 7:20-ish. We also have streams throughout the week. Come check it out. Come hang out and chat.
All right. Make sure you come back next week for the next episode of Level Up Podcast. So do your ears a favor, hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online, and as always,
level up.